Good afternoon. I welcome you with all my heart. It's good being with you again this beautiful Sunday, 1991 AD. Ask yourself, what is your reason for coming? What do you expect? What do you want? Do you want to listen to what I have to say? Did you come to listen to a lecture? Did you come to observe the speaker so you can compare him with other teachers? What is the real reason for you coming here? The reasons I just mentioned are the wrong reasons. What is the right reason? There isn't any right reason. Everything just is. When you try to analyze your reason for doing something, you are negating your reason for existence. You were meant to exist spontaneously, to just be. It's interesting how your body can do everything it's supposed to do without your help. You are in your right place, you know. Going through those experiences that you need to go through at this time. There's no use complaining. There's no use talking about it. There's no use criticizing yourself or anyone else. There's no use in finding fault. Everything is in its right place. There are no mistakes. Even if there appears to be something wrong in your life, emotionally, physically, financially, mentally, never judge these things. Never come to any conclusions. Live in the moment. Just be. Do not be this or that. Just be. When you try to be this or that, you spoil it. You are unique, just the way you are. You are special. You are what you are because of where you have put yourself, and there's no other reason. Drop all of your preconceived ideas. Drop all your dogmas, your superstitions, your analyzations. Everything has to go. You have to become totally empty. This is satsang. It is not a lecture. It is not a sermon. It is not a talk. Satsang is very different than the things we're used to in the West. Sat means knowledge or being. Sang means in the company. You're in the company of being or in the company of knowledge. Whose knowledge, whose being? Yours. You are in the company of your highest being, your highest self. It's as if you were in the ocean. You are immersed in the ocean. You and the ocean are one. So it is with satsang. In other words, you did not come to acquire knowledge or being. You are knowledge and you are being. This is your true nature. This is satsang. You are in the presence of your own divinity. In your own divinity, there are no mistakes. There's no lack, there's no limitation of any kind. Some of you people have been meditating a long time. You have come from different groups. And you have learned many meditation techniques. Some of you tell me that you meditate on the I thought. This is erroneous. Meditation and self-inquiry are different like night and day. Self-inquiry is not meditation. When you meditate on the I thought, it is like meditating on your disease. Or meditating on your body. Because the I thought is the culprit that is responsible for your world and everything that's in it. It's a lie. You do not meditate on the I thought. The I thought doesn't exist. In self-inquiry, you hold on to the I thought. You follow the I thought. You abide in the I thought. You follow it to its source, which is God or the Self. Thus discovering that you are the Self and there is no I thought. But from talking to some of you on the phone, you are living the I thought. You believe you've got to think about the I thought all the time. You do not hold on to the I thought. You only hold on to it to the extent that you follow it back to the heart center, the spiritual heart, which is on the right side of your chest. That is the only reason you abide in the I thought. When you meditate, there has to be a subject and an object. Meditation is duality. For you are the subject meditating on an object. You therefore choose your object of meditation. Can be Buddha, Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, Ramakrishna, Ramana Maharshi, any deity that you choose. Or it can be a flower, or a tree, or a rock, or a river. You see, meditation is to increase your concentration, to make you one-pointed, so that your thoughts may stop, and the object of your meditation becomes real. Ramakrishna used to meditate on the goddess Kali 24 hours a day until she became real to him. Meditation is all good and well. It has its place, and it's very helpful. But meditation is not self-inquiry. Try to remember that they're two separate things. Self-inquiry is negating the whole universe until only the self remains. You started early in the morning. As soon as you open your eyes, you observe yourself becoming worldly, and you realize that just a few moments ago, you were not cognizant of the world at all. Where were you? And in the space in between sleeping and awakening, you had an abounding peace. Think about that. In that space, as soon as you open your eyes, before you become cognizant of the world, there is a tremendous peace and joy. It only lasts for a few seconds. The reason it only lasts for a few seconds is because the I takes you over. The I thought begins to rise from your heart center, and as it begins to rise, you become more and more aware of your body, your affairs, and your world. It finally rises to the brain. At that time you say, I am late for work. I have to get dressed. I feel sick. I need a cup of coffee. I have a headache. And the eye becomes very active. Now the secret of self-inquiry is to find out where the I came from. Who gave birth to the I? Where did it come from? The only way you can find out is by following it back to its source. Therefore, you inquire, to whom does the I come? Or, who am I? The same thing. To whom does the I come? Think about that. When you were asleep, there was no I. You were not aware of an I. You were in deep sleep. When you were dreaming, you were in a completely different world. You were aware of the I in your dream. Because you say, I dreamt. And now that you are awake, you say, I am awake. It would be more proper to say, I is awake. We're talking about the I thought. We're not talking about the I as consciousness. We're talking about the I thought. You see, that I thought does not exist. And the only way you're going to find out it does not exist is by following it back to its source. The question you ask is, then why does it persist? If it does not exist, why does it haunt me? Why am I always saying, I am this and I am that? I need this and I need that. Part of the awakening process is when you compare the I thought to the water in a mirage. The water in the mirage seems very real to you. And if you don't know anything about a mirage, you would believe that the water is real. So, when you don't know anything about your reality, you believe your body, your mind, your affairs, and your so-called life is real. But if it's real, how come it changes all the time? What is the definition of something being real? Something that exists the same way forever. Does your body exist the same way forever? You're not the same person you were 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, or 30 years ago. When you were first conceived, you were no bigger than the size of a pinhead. And look what came out of the pinhead. So when somebody calls you a pinhead, don't feel insulted. Your arms, your legs, your lungs, your hair, all came out of this pinhead. You were born in order to die. For as soon as you're born, you begin to die. You begin to grow older and older and older. And your reason for being born is to die. Sounds strange. but true. Therefore, your body cannot be real. For it was born to die and it changes constantly. It's never the same. How can you therefore hold on to your body as if it were real and abide in your body and think of your body night and day and be concerned with your body and waste your time dressing the body continuously in fine clothes, bathing it 3 times a day, feeding it all kinds of exquisite foods, doing all of these things to your body is like beating a dead horse. Whatever you do, you're going to become weak in the end and die. Whatever you do, there's no escape from that. Arnold Schwarzenegger likes his body. What will he think about his body 50 years from now? When he's weak and decrepit and he can't walk? These people become very disillusioned. Very upset with themselves. Somebody was telling me that Jack LaLanne refuses to come out of his house. He takes tranquilizers and he can't believe that he can't pull boats anymore and do all of those feats he used to do. In other words, he's running away. Isn't this the truth about all of us? So what are you doing with your life? What are you chasing? What are you trying to acquire? What are you trying to do for yourself to improve your life as a body? It's all a waste of time. You should devote about 5% of your life to your body. That's all it's worth. To a wise person, somehow begins to understand this. And they ask themselves the question, then what is reality? It is true my body is not real because it changes, changes, changes. The world is not real because it also changes, changes, changes. Everything changes constantly. Therefore, what is real? Asking yourself this question is the beginning of wisdom. For it leads to other questions. Who am I then? If I am not the body, then who am I? One day, you begin to catch on, and you say to yourself, I asked myself, who am I? Emphasizing the I. What is this I that tells me I am human, that I am the body, that I am alive? You begin to feel the I in your chest and in your brain. Something happens within yourself when you begin to see that you are conscious, you are conscious during the dream state, during the deep sleep state, during the waking state. Therefore, you begin to understand that you are consciousness. Consciousness is absolute reality, pure awareness. Or you can call it God. When I refer to God, I am not speaking of anthropomorphic deity. I am referring to absolute reality, to Brahman, pure intelligence. You begin to feel an inkling of this truth inside of you. When this happens to you, you will be attracted to the right book, or to the right teacher, or to the right environment, where you can go further on the path. Now, in the beginning, it's very exciting, because you've discovered something new. You have begun searching for yourself. But it seems to me, unless you have a proper teacher, the initial stage wears off. And after a year or so, you've read all the books, you've heard all the lectures, you've seen many teachers, and you're becoming bored. This is the time that a spiritual aspirant either goes through the friction with flying colors and gets to the other side, or gives up the whole thing, becoming disgusted because they have not received illumination as yet. They have not awakened. Therefore, this is the time to do the most work on yourself. This is the time to forget about your wanting realization, wanting something to happen, wanting to become free, and begin to live in the moment spontaneously. not concerning yourself with the world, with others, but developing compassion. You begin to work on your greed, on your lust. Those things must go. You begin to tolerate everything just the way it is. There's no longer anything to fight. And there's no longer anything to fear. You become mellow. Things that used to disturb you have stopped disturbing you. And then all of a sudden, you notice your mind becomes quieter and quieter. The thoughts stop attacking you to an extent. You practice meditation and self-inquiry both together. Wanting nothing, looking for nothing. You've stopped running around the world. You have settled down. For you realize wherever you go, you've got to take yourself. One place is as good as another. It makes no difference where that place is. You become calm. No longer perturbed. You become the observer, the witness to your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, your reactions. You're always watching. You're always aware. You always see yourself in action. And you always ask, why am I doing this? And why am I acting this way? What do I really want? You realize you have so much time to live in this body. And you become more and more involved in the spiritual life. When you practice meditation, you focus your attention either on a living sage, which will bring you faster results, or you can focus on a sage of your religion that is gone, which will improve your concentration and make you more one-pointed. When I tell you to meditate on God, many people ask me, how do I meditate on God? God is invisible. Therefore, you meditate on the first name of God, which is I Am. This is really the highest form of meditation. with your respiration, you become quiet, and you inhale and you say I. You exhale and you say am. This is really the highest form of meditation you can do. And during your waking hours, when you're busy, you practice self-inquiry. You can do this formally also. If you wish to sit in the silence and practice self-inquiry, by all means, you do that too. But do not believe that that's meditation. They're both separate. And it's simple to practice self-inquiry wherever you are. In the back of your mind, realize you're trying to destroy your thoughts. You're trying to empty your mind. And then your mind will disappear. So whenever thoughts come to you, you simply ask yourself, to whom do they come? You can do this anywhere. To whom do these thoughts come? You never answer. But the answer always comes by itself. These thoughts come to me. I feel them, I think them. We're back to the I again. So this means if it weren't for the I would not feel the depression. I would not feel the doubt, the apprehension, the fear, or whatever. Because I feel it. This is a wonderful revelation for me. For it means if I can only get rid of the I will not have this problem again. And the way you get rid of this I is to inquire, from whence did it arise? Where did it come from? As you think about this, you become silent. Almost immediately, you will feel a joy, a peace, a feeling of well-being, welling up inside of you. You watch, you observe. Thoughts will come to you from all over the place. They will tell you, stop wasting your time, go bowling. They will tell you, this is boring. I can be doing something constructive. Your thoughts will pop up and tell you all kinds of things. They will tell you, I've been doing this thing for a while, nothing is happening. That's all the game of the mind. You have to work it through. Whatever thought comes to you, you ask, to whom does it come? Over and over again. When you get tired of doing this, you meditate and I am. You always do something. You take your mind off the world, off your body, and off your thoughts. For after all, if you do not do this, where will you be? You will be going through the same experiences that millions of other people go through. Fear of the unknown, never knowing if you're going to have a heart attack tomorrow, when you'll still be in this world. Fear that somebody's after you, trying to take away your good things or hurt you. You'll have all kinds of fears. The choice is yours. This is your life. Let us practice the I Am meditation. For when you practice it at satsang, it becomes more powerful for you, and you notice results. The first thing you do is you make yourself comfortable. You relax in your chair. You close your eyes to remove obstructions. You begin to observe your breath. Do not emphasize your breath. You observe your breath. If your body does not feel comfortable or relaxed, tell it to relax. You may work your way up from your toes to your head, telling every part of your body to relax. Again, you become a cognizant of your breath, just the way you breathe normally. Your feelings. You become aware of them. You become the witness. You are observing yourself breathing and feeling. Then you ask yourself the question, who is the observer? Who is doing the observing? And with your respiration, you begin the meditation. You inhale and you say, I. You exhale and you say, am. Then rest in the silence a moment or so and say, I am again with your respiration. After a long practice, the space between the I Ams will become greater and greater. And you will begin to feel that you are consciousness. So practice I am. Feel free to ask any questions. Long talk, eh?
No. Okay, Robert. I hesitate to bring this out in the open, but it's there, so. I have been overcome with the greed of food. I remember now, memories come back of the most marvelous meals I've ever eaten in my life, and all I want to do is eat. It's in my mind. I don't do it, but it's in my mind pressing there. And I notice when I go to a restaurant, it's not only my own food, but I look around at what everybody else is eating, and I want it all. And it's uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable.
You're not alone.
Right. You're not far from alone. We all want it all.
It's a rough one.
Well, these things do come up. When you begin the process of self-inquiry, it's like dormant seeds ready to sprout. Things from a past life. You're bringing everything up to the surface so you can get rid of it. This is why, with many people, things sometimes appear to get progressively worse, because everything is coming to the surface. You're inquiring, to whom does it come? So it's coming up and out, up and out. Therefore, when these things come to you like that, feelings, lust, greed, do not be disturbed, but joyfully observe it. Observe yourself feeling this way. Watch it, look at it intelligently. And you may ask, to whom does it come? But as you observe it, as you inquire, to whom does it come, the feeling becomes weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. And it will ultimately disappear completely. All these things do happen. But realize they're not you. Those thoughts, those feelings do not belong to you. They belong to I. You say, I feel this. When you inquire, who am I? What is the source of I? The greed, the lust, the feelings will go with it, and they will all dissipate and leave you forever. You just have to keep up the practice. Do not allow these fears or these so-called things that come to you to frighten you or to make you feel something is wrong. Merely realize they come from the deep recesses of your mind, and you're getting rid of them. It's like when you shoot the ducks at the shooting gallery. The ducks are all flat on the floor, then they pop up, and you hit one and it goes down again. The same thing with your thoughts. As the thoughts come, you shoot them with your gun of inquiry. To whom do they come? And the thought falls dead and goes away. Then another one comes up, and you ask, to whom does this come? Where is its source? And it falls dead and goes away. You keep this up. as you keep doing this, you will find one day that your mind is free. And you feel bliss and happiness and joy that you never felt before. The body is a temple. It's a temple that gets old and decrepit. And no matter how much care you take of it, it's going to get old and get decrepit. Just like a temple. You should take care of it, but not to give it your whole life. I get up about 6 o'clock in the morning. I do exercise. I go for walks in the park. I make myself a drink and put hundreds of vitamins in it. And by 7, 8 o'clock, I'm all finished. That's it. That's the only attention I give my body. To keep it going. In reality, the body does not exist. So if you spend too much time with it, you're putting your attention on something that's going to go anyway. If you put your attention on the self, on absolute reality, on I am, on consciousness, then you will become consciousness and not become a body. But sure, it tells you the body is the temple. And this is a temple, but must also be destroyed, just like a temple will be destroyed. No thing lasts forever. When you're 100 years old, and you can't walk and you have to be taken care of, what will you say about your temple then? So before you get like that, find the truth about yourself and become free and liberated.
The eye thought seems to act like it knows everything. It knows who I am. It's familiar with all these people, and it wants this and it wants that. But when I inquire, and slowly start to see that the eye thought is just an illusion, it seems to be like abiding in ignorance. Like I don't know it. I don't know what anything is, like divine ignorance. It seems to be a place of not a knower when the eye goes.
This is a good place to be. When you no longer think, I know is a statement of ignorance. For as Bob says, we do not know anything. We don't know why we look like we do. We don't know why a tree is a tree, or why a dog is a dog. We don't know why we were born, why we die. We don't even know who we are. We know nothing. Therefore, when somebody appears intelligent, they think they know something, that's a joke. Because no one really knows anything. We're born into a world where things just appear to exist. And we take them for granted. Why is a dog a dog? we give it a name, dog. Why do we have men and women? To propagate the race. Why? We know absolutely nothing. Therefore, it's real funny to me when people walk around thinking they know something. Now, the interesting thing is, when you begin to admit to yourself that you know nothing, you become nothing. And then you're everything. But as long as you believe you know something, that of course is ego, and always gets you in trouble. Because when you believe you know something, humanity always wants to change to something, into something else. Wars begin, man's and humanity begins, man's and humanity to man. But when you feel you know nothing, then there's nothing to do. There's no one to be angry at. There's nothing you wish to change. You leave everything alone. You do not try to convince anyone about anything. And you become free. So a free person is really a person who's good for nothing. But he's nothing. That's why he's free.
But he's good for that. For being nothing.
Free and nothing are synonymous.
No. That sounds good to me.
So when you're good for nothing, you're free.
Yeah, okay.
But if you think you're free and you're good for something, then you're deluding yourself. Be good for nothing, you like it. I know some of you are wondering to yourselves, if everyone was good for nothing, what would become of the world? Do not concern yourself with the world. The same power that knows how to grow mangoes in a mango tree, wheat in the field, cherries in a cherry tree, that knows how to maintain and sustain the universe as it appears, will always take care of everything, even you. You have absolutely nothing to worry about. I realize also you have been brought up to believe if you do not make something out of yourself, if you do not take care of your affairs, you will suffer. This is a blatant lie. No one was born to suffer. If you allow yourself to be the natural person you are, everything will always be provided. And you will be radiantly happy. But when you interfere in the process and try to change things, become somebody, do something, you may appear to go through those processes, but it's not happy. There's no joy. There's no real beauty. It's all mechanical. Well, we've got prasad to share with everybody. This is a gift from the South. You'll never starve if you come here. These look good. Why don't you open this?
Just try to be aware not to leave too much all around the floor and tables.
Good
this
idea,
time.
Jay. I'm with you.
Go ahead, why don't you take this home?
This is a no self bakery.
No self bakery, huh?
Just let other people happen.
Pass them back just all over like this.
Why don't you take it home?
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait. I'm ready for another.
Take that one all up.
Keep that one?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pass it around. I keep what's left.
No, we'll leave the cake. We need the cake. Where's the fridge again? Just cake.
Well, some people might prefer bread. You like bread or cake?
No.
I'll put it here.
This is a banana bread.
You mean you're going to drive us bananas now after all this? We're already bananas.
There you go.
Nothing else.
Okay. How about you, Robin?
No.
Why not? You don't go some just help yourself.
Okay.